Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Great. How are you? We're back.
We are back. It's the weekend. It's the weekend. Well, maybe not for any of you who are listening, but it is.
It's the web.
It is. So, this is the 86th episode, the weekend beat. 86. And we are going to discuss, you know, the more I thought about it, it actually probably is in my top 10 favorite movies. And I just picked 10 because, I don't know, I just picked that as a number. But a very important movie, and that is The Dark Knight. So, I think we'd like to pick books and movies that are all relevant to today. And some things they're not relevant. But this, when you brought it up as a topic, I remember thinking, oh yeah, you're right. All those scenarios, just the movie itself, the acting itself is incredible, and it's worth it. So we'll do that. But before we get into it, as always, thank you for tuning into the Mod State podcast. If you like what you hear here, please go to modstate.com, where you can find all of our op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as links to the podcast and links to our social media outlets. If you're on your cellular mobile device, please log in, scroll all the way down to the bottom. That's where you will find the podcast links. And then both on your personal laptop and home computer and on the cell phone, you'll find the links to the social media outlets at the top underneath the icon that's there. So with that, let's get in to The Dark Knight. I wish I had some clips. Probably legally can't do that.
Well, we actually could, because the Fair Use Act allows for such for the purpose of analysis.
Oh, well.
But we don't have those ready right now. And, I mean, I guess we could sling one in at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Don't worry.
We're going to play the whole thing, and we're going to do, you know, director's commentary. Well, we're going to act like Saturday morning directors instead of Monday morning directors. But
there you go. I like it.
We could. I've actually got a clip of the Joker's last laugh.
Okay. Literally. So it's going to go in somewhere.
For the purpose of analysis.
Okay.
And I don't think Christopher Nolan's that bored.
Nah, he's all right.
Just so.
He's got enough going on. So, The Dark Knight. we'll get into this as I do. What's that?
10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. 2008. So, it's kind of crazy that it was that long ago. But you know, I didn't even think about that until we started doing the review for this. But so
at the end of this month or the beginning of February, I forget.
It was released.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the end of this month or the beginning of February. I could be wrong.
It was in, release day was actually July 14th of 2008.
I wonder why. Did Heath Ledger die at this time?
Yeah, Heath Ledger died in January.
Okay.
Right after filming it.
That's right. And they yanked all the, they had a bunch of promos set up, like a viral marketing thing centered around the Joker that they yanked.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't respect his family.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
his child.
The cast is star-studded cast. Christian Bale, Michael Caine, Heath Ledger, Gary Oldman, Aaron Eckhart, and Maggie Gyllenhaal, and Morgan Freeman of the group.
Eric Roberts. Right
there. Yep. Was also
Julie Roberts' brother.
He was in that. So we do know, like I said, it was released in the summer of 2008. Obviously, it's a DC comic book. And it was, screenplay was by Jonathan Nolan and then Christopher Nolan as well. And it was directed by Christopher Nolan. So
They teamed up again for Interstellar, but anyway.
You're right, which is also fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the, so it is considered to be, by film critics, to be one of the best films in 2000s and one of the best superhero films as well. I do realize that some people enjoy the action-packed superhero, you know, DC comic type style. I think that
I can't stand it.
I really can't either, and I'm sorry for anybody out there that.
Hey, do you do you?
I guess that's the thing. The reason I find The Dark Knight, it's crazy that you would find us in my top favorite movies.
Me too. It's in my top.
That it's a superhero film, yet it happens to fit as one of my favorite movies.
So plausible.
But I guess we'll probably, you'll find out
it's
why.
It's plausible.
Yeah. It's.
Aside from the some of the toys here are a little crazy, but I mean, I watched my sister had never seen it the other night because she hated it that it was Heath Ledger, that it was Heath Ledger's other film. Last film. And so we watched it the other night, and did a great job. But, of course, she felt, I pointed out to her, I said, is there a bigger tool bag in all of comic books than Bruce Wayne when he shows up in that helicopter with those chicks and then absconds with the entire crew? Of course, he's got to date a Russian ballerina, and he just points to the waiter when he wants to take a table. It's like, you're that guy, aren't you?
Yeah.
So it was very plausible.
Yeah.
I mean, a young billionaire?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, especially in 2000.
Zuckerberg, who knows Kung Fu?
I was going to say, exactly, right? Who knows Kung Fu and has a really deep voice or whatever voice that is. So, yeah, I guess the plausibility and maybe the human element of it as well kind of leads into it.
There's no honor amongst thieves.
Indeed.
You know, all these criminal movies, they act like there's some code. Oh, yeah, there's a code. All right. You know, so, cheat to make a profit.
Indeed.
You know. Whereas in this, they're all turning on each other. I mean, the beginning of the movie starts that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically built around anarchy as well.
The DA and the police don't get along.
Yep.
The mayor's trying to juggle the whole thing, and
yeah.
Anyway, so take it away.
No. It's a good one. So this it did have about over, I think it was in around over $1 billion overall. Worldwide for revenue.
Top 15 grossing.
Yeah, became one of the highest grossing films, obviously, in 2018. 32nd highest grossing film of all time, unadjusted for inflation. It obviously received 8 Academy Award nominations. It won the Best Award for Best Sound Editing, and then Heath Ledger was posthumously. Yes, thank you. I need to drink more water.
For
Best Supporting Actor.
And that's why I didn't see it at the time, because I thought, okay, no offense to these guys, but is it like John Lennon's the most talented Beatle, Jimi Hendrix is the best guitarist ever?
Yeah.
Because they died.
Yes. You know? However,
this young man, as the New York Times wrote in their review, peered into the abyss. He truly did.
So what,
if you're gonna go all out.
If you're a method actor and you're going to play the Joker, I guess you do it the way Heath Ledger did it. So
you're gonna die, possibly.
Well, possibly. I guess
if
that.
I mean, if you're going out,
hey,
walk off grand slam.
Yeah. So you were telling me what he actually did to prepare for this. So go ahead there. I'm gonna let you take that.
Well, the point of this obviously is for you to steer us through the framework sociopolitically. But
yes.
Real quick, why? I mean, I couldn't have been more wrong. Actually, I didn't watch this movie until I was stationed in the infantry with 1.7 at 29 Palms. One of my Marines, you know, who was a huge Batman guy, I was like, dude, I don't watch superhero movies. He was like, wait a minute. You haven't seen The Dark Knight.
So this took you that long to get there?
Yes.
Wow. All right, go ahead.
Is your house about to blow up?
Oh, we're good.
That's cool. I just wanted to make sure. I mean, you know.
It's sometimes
make sure you sign off of the cloud.
Sometimes it just got to all burn, right? So go ahead.
Well,
I will.
The world burns. So no, it's fine. I just, you know, I'm just my upper lip sweating, my eyes twitching here from infantry training, but that's okay. No, it took me. Excuse me. I went out there in summer of 2013, and it was the summer of 2014 when I got a new roommate at the barracks. One of my Marines in second platoon. And he was like, wait a minute. So it was a Friday night. I wasn't drinking at the time. You know, I was in training. So I was like, all right, why not? Nothing better to do. And I realized my refusing to go with my brother to see it in summer of 08 was one of the biggest mistakes that I ever made in terms of movies. You know, I regret it. He truly did peer into the abyss. But anyway, for this role, he 2 months before filming started, he spent 30 days in the mental ward, being treated like any other patient, where they're criminally insane. And he was a method actor, so he stayed in character. And then the last month before filming, he locked himself in a hotel suite with just himself and walked around in character as the Joker, laughing, practicing his gestures, recording, tape recording, and then he kept a journal that he then kept all the way through filming that his father has released after 10 years of pressure of some of, I don't know that he released all of it, out of respect for the family, but some pretty dark material in there. But anyway, the guy supposedly, and I'm assuming a certain amount of this is true due to the polytoxic nature of his overdose and subsequent death, or consequent death, but supposedly was having benzodiazepines and opiates delivered to the room as well. And I say that not because I'm looking to add any fuel to fire or smear the young man. I feel bad for him. I really, you know, there are those who dispute that he lost his mind making this movie. Well,
yeah.
When Commissioner Gordon gets on the spot named commissioner after the death of the acting commissioner, and the Joker applauds from his cell, that's kind of funny. And then there's a part where they actually detonated a building, you know, when the hospital, quote unquote, the movie gets blown up. It's a real detonation. And he ad-libbed like the last charges didn't go off. And he, in frustration, you know, swings his arms and hits the button a few more times. That was ad-libbed. Okay. Huh. But then you have things like when the guy gets shocked trying to take off the Batman's mask. And that's part of the script. And then Ledger runs, the Joker runs up, starts shaking and mocking the guy, and then spits on him. It's like, holy, you know, this guy lost it. And I don't remember what the line was, but he was so, Sir Michael Caine had not seen him in full character and regalia until the shooting of the scene at Bruce Wayne's party for Harvey Dent.
Oh, yeah. Fundraiser. Yep, yep.
He hadn't seen Heath Ledger yet in character, he'd seen him in character, he hadn't seen him in costume and all that. And when he showed up, you know, we're tonight's entertainment. And she's, you know, well, Sir Michael Caine had a line that he was supposed to say when the thugs got off the elevator that he totally forgot.
Really?
You know, here he is, this incredible actor.
Oh, yeah.
Knighted for his contributions. And he just completely, for a moment, fell out of character. He couldn't remember his line.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a testament to, maybe one of my favorite, I think you said Gary Oldman's actually your favorite actor in that film.
Yes, he's had a far more illustrious career. Knight's Tale didn't do anything for me.
Brokeback
Mountain was good, but Heath Ledger's career, The Patriot was Braveheart for colonists.
Sure, I'll give you that. You didn't like him in what's the 10 ways to hate you or 10 things I don't like about you?
10 things I hate about you.
Yeah. Of course you know that title.
I didn't see the whole thing. So I can't really comment.
That's fair. That's fair.
I think Sir Michael Caine, I think it's fair to say, has had a far more illustrious career.
Yes. Yes. I even liked Michael Caine in Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock.
And thusly, Gary Oldman.
Yes.
Had a far more illustrious career.
Yeah. Yes, he has.
An incredible job as Commissioner Gordon.
So.
Yeah, this particular part, he deserved every ounce of that Oscar.
Yes, I agree. So let's talk about, I guess without going through the plot, because I think there's a few specific things in this film that I think grabbed me philosophically and are relevant today. And so this was 2008. So obviously we're in the height of the Patriot Act. We're not quite to Edward Snowden and the NSA surveillance. but we definitely know about it. We definitely know that
Roper Dahl hasn't wandered off his post yet.
He has not. That didn't happen until later.
Chelsea Manning hadn't
leaked everything.
Chelsea either.
Or hadn't become Chelsea yet. You're right. So There's a couple things, and I think the take home here is, at what means are you willing to go for a specific thing? So in this case, relevant to the movie is this war on terrorism, and excuse me, you know, what are you willing to do to justify the means or to reach the goal that you need? And there's a couple things.
Machiavellian and implications.
Yeah, so you use the word Machiavellian. That's a very poignant, pertinent phrase or theory.
The prince definitely comes to mind.
Yes. So Machiavellian is just for what if people don't know what it means. It's essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's to do whatever it takes to better your status, or
the end justifies the means.
The
catchphrase coined.
The end justifies the means. So, with that being said, there's several situations here in this movie that are quite interesting, and maybe could be taught in a basic philosophy 101 class.
But it could be in political science.
Or political science. Yeah, absolutely. So it really gets down to a couple things here. And you can probably hear the fire alarm going off in the back. What's that?
Fire.
There's another fire.
Fire. Stand by.
So let's just we'll go.
No quarter.
So as we know in the movie, the Joker or Heath Ledger's character takes over this gang, and the mob basically decides to take the Joker up on his offer, and he essentially is going to wreak havoc in Gotham City. So there's several things that happen. The Joker continues to kill people unless the Batman actually reveals his identity. He does kill several people, and until Harvey Dent learns that, obviously spoiler alert here, that Rachel, this would Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, is the next target.
Dent, and some little accountant threatened to expose who he was and who the Batman was, so the Joker then changed the game.
So Harvey Dent announces that he is Batman, so he kind of takes the fall, and of course,
on his own accord.
Yep, and
he pulls a saw and falls in his own sword.
Indeed, the Joker then kind of attacks his convoy. And Batman comes to Dent's rescue. It's this kind of a series of events. And
Commissioner Gordon makes the arrest. He's not really dead.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to I'm sneaking through here because I want to get to these. So we'll get to the first one. So the Joker essentially announces that Gotham will be his subject come nightfall. And what he does is he rigs two ferries. So at this point, Gotham's being evacuated, and he rigs two ferries, one containing civilians and the other containing prisoners. So inmates, and he says he's going to blow them both up at midnight. But but he'll only let one live if it's passengers, you know, who have been supplied. They basically been supplied with the trigger to the other boat's explosives, blow each other up. And so this is the first, this is the kind of the culmination of all these sort of interesting scenarios, ends justify the means kind of situations. So the first one's this utilitarian type situation you're proposed with. And that is, you've got one ferry that is full of inmates, the other full of civilians. And
like the Siege of Thermopylae type deal.
Exactly. And they each have a trigger to blow up the other ship. And I remember watching this, and it was interesting to see. So, you know, you've got this group of civilians that make the case that, well, they're inmates.
They had their chance.
They had their chance, blow them up. And then you had the inmates, which I don't think spoiler alert here.
Well, a few of them wanted to. Yes. They truly were wicked.
Exactly. And they were sort of validating that opinion. But it was this interesting face-off. And I remember thinking, and still to this day wonder, given that true situation, like if this really did happen, would your sort of morality go out the window when you're faced with something like this? And I believe the Joker actually used, or Heath Ledger had a line that spoke about anarchy a bit. And, you know, given, and it maybe wasn't in this context, but he said, given the chance, they'll turn on you. And I just wondered, in this situation, would, you know, given your beliefs, your morality, would you feel justified to pull the trigger or, you know, blow up this other boat? Again, I don't know. But in the same context, so now we've got a situation that's inherently, it's bad. You've got someone that is pitting these two evacuating ferries against one another. And Batman goes ahead and uses sonar cell phone. And this device spies on the entire city. And if I remember correctly, Morgan Freeman's character, so Batman.
He's the chief operating officer
Of Wayne. Of Wayne Enterprises. Mm-hmm. And he, I believe he becomes reluctant to help. Because
the accountant that was going to expose Bruce Wayne, he comes forward. And Fox, you know, Morgan Freeman's character didn't know about this, but he said, look, he's reassigned a whole division of R&D overnight. And it was, quote unquote, doing cell phones in the army. Well, so Fox figures out what he's doing. He thinks that Bruce Wayne is trying to commercialize this concept of
spying
on 30 million people.
So, of course, he's reluctant to help, but then he does, and this is how Batman finds the Joker. And, of course, both the prisoners and civilians refuse to kill each other. Batman apprehends the Joker, and, you know, that's kind of where we go.
Gotta do everything ourselves, don't we?
Yeah. You do a pretty good Joker. If anyone wants to see John's Joker, you got to just go to the YouTube channel and look up Mod State, and you'll find – I think you do one, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a weak run through. I wish I had done it over again. You know, I was supposed to do more, and you know, it's not my best. But you know, I kind of ended up disturbing some of my friends and family with that. No joke. As far as after that, like I did it for Halloween, and like I genuinely freaked some people out. They were like, "You're a little too good at that." So,
well, there's your Dark Knight.
I thought my jokes were bad.
Yeah. So, essentially, you know, we'll leave the ending as to what it is so you can watch it. But there's these specific things that I think are relevant to today. And that is this, you know, the ends justify the means. So, obviously, what we have now and today is this concept of the war on terror. And we were willing, and the nation was actually willing to forego rights. And everyone in this sort of nationalized, this nation that was very unified post 9/11 wasn't as reluctant to give up, even to say like Fourth Amendment rights, and were more willing for surveillance for their own protection.
Oh no! Even the New York Times was calling for war and expansion of federal power.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that over time, though, you have this. This because once something is in place, you know, there it's very hard to take it back. It's, you know, any entitlement, any welfare, any sort of program that actually gives more power, allows an agency further reach, is not going to be something that's going to be easily shut down. So that's why it's interesting to see, you know, this concept of this sonar device, that's. Can spy on the entire city. Well, okay. Let's present the scenario. Let's say you have one defender of the city, and or a small group. This small group of the Justice League in your city, and they're given the power to spy on the entire city to protect you from crime and to protect your family and keep everyone safe in the community. Now, you see that this is a good, this is good. This is inherently good. This is, we can be safe. We'll know that these people are watching over us, sort of like a god, if you will. You can make that analogy. But the question then is, where's the slippery slope? So, you know, if you ask, if you were to just ask somebody or, you know, just ask me, like, does this sound like a good idea? Can we have a Batman? Let's let him do this. You know, I think people would maybe say, yeah, let's, that sounds like a good idea.
But in spite of the fact that that is, that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
A huge violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Unreasonable search and seizure. Assault. What if he's wrong? Okay. He didn't kill people by design, but he did act. I mean, we're talking about no due process, no habeas corpus. He's a vigilante. He's a lawbreaker. He's a felon.
However, we also let the government do this as well. Now, maybe not to the extent of Batman spying on the entire city this way, but you know, we were willing to give up. The nation was more willing to give up their Fourth Amendment rights in a quicker fashion than any other time in 2001. And
let
now,
me answer a quick question. You were in the army.
Sure.
What branch of the service was Dwight Eisenhower in?
What branch of the service? It's a good question. Was he Army?
The Army.
Yeah.
Which is ironic. The Eisenhower jacket is worn by
the Navy,
and the Marines.
Yeah.
The Marines have a khaki version. Well, I asked that for a reason, because he's the last five-star general we'll probably ever have. You know, and I say that because in his farewell address, he said, beware the military-industrial complex.
Yes. Very.
A man who was very, very much center-right and had commanded. He was the unified commander of Allied forces. Now, why is that? Do you think that might tie in here a bit?
So in the context of the military-industrial complex, so...
the failure of half a dozen intel agencies to prevent 9/11. Our answer is to create
more.
DHS, exactly. Another bureaucracy.
It's very... it's interesting to bring that... I guess you're right. So Eisenhower did have this... this pretty amazing speech that was given, and you can go find it. And he does warn about this military-industrial complex, and that's the issue with, I guess the issue with reaction to issues that we have. We do that very well in the United States. Well, there was a failure, so therefore we need to, instead of re-examining what we have existing, like the connections between the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Central Intelligence Agency, and then the little-known agency that most people don't know about, the Defense Intelligence Agency, which also plays a role in all the intelligence agencies. Instead of re-examining the relationships between those agencies, we just create another one.
We create the largest private military in Western society.
Yes. Yes.
That now administrates, most people don't know this, the Coast Guard.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, and even beyond the, like, the military-industrial complex and being aware, you know, I think it's like to create more to better protect. And when we don't always stop and think about if, you know, what do they say in some military circles, that more is less. And in this case, you can make the argument that more intrusive is better, or... more of something is better. And I don't think that's inherently the case. And I think that's, even beyond that, when it comes to the movie, this connection in this movie is literally between good and evil. That's what it is. The society's pits against Joker and Batman, in this movie, the Joker and Batman are pitted against one another. But, you know, the Joker makes a good point. He says there's actually two sides of the same chaotic coin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And literally, you can point to either side. He points, like, Batman's always breaking the laws and creating chaos. I mean, where he's officially declared an outlaw, you know, but to the Joker, you know, Batman breaks
they embrace him for now because they need him.
Exactly. So it's almost like we'll bend the rules because you help us in a certain way, right? And that's...
Afterwards, we put our soldiers on trial for war crimes while Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney...
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it even comes down to, you know, what does the Joker say at the end? He says, you can't kill me, you know, or you can't live without me, or something along those lines.
He tells me, you know, you complete me. And these people, you know, they're going to cast you out. You're a leper. You're nothing. Because he tells the Joker at one point to Batman and says, you know, you're garbage who kills for money. And he says, don't talk to me like you're one of them. And he gestures to the cops. He goes, because you're not.
Yeah. So that's what's so good about this. The end of the movie, that the people turn on Batman and they believe he is evil. I mean, that's why you break the bat signal. And I mean, mm-hmm. It's just, you create something, and this is what you need to be careful about. And I think that's what Eisenhower was suggesting. You have to be careful what you create. And because eventually it becomes something that you don't want and you can't have, regardless of whether you thought it was good in the first place.
President Reagan expounded upon that when he said that a central government that has the power to give you everything has the power to take from you everything.
Yes. Yes. And it's, you know, what, even getting down to Harvey Dent, right? And he... essentially becomes, I think that's probably what you're trying to say, he becomes what he was trying to prevent, right? Evil.
Right, and early on he referenced Caesar, and his fiance tells him Caesar didn't give up his power, and he says, okay, so you either die a hero or you see yourself live long enough to become the villain.
Exactly, yes. Oh gosh, getting into this, I mean, it really is just an awesome... an awesome
and then
movie.
There's the parable of the guy who was stealing the gemstones when Sir Michael Caine's character, Alfred, was stationed as a British soldier in Burma. You know, he said, we found a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. And he said, because it made good sport to him.
Yeah.
That's the only reason he was stealing it.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, you know, that was him saying, you know, some men talking about the Joker, they just want to watch the world burn. You can't reason with them.
Yes.
You know, money doesn't affect them. And so then after everything really goes to hell in a handbasket, Harvey's burn up and God knows where, whacking cops. And Bruce Wayne asks Alfred, he says, so that bandit in Burma, did you ever catch him? And he says, yes. He says, wow. And Alfred looks at him and goes, we burned down the forest.
Yep. And that is like the last the last thing.
That scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, we burned down the forest. And that's, I mean, that's what, so when I think about the war on terrorism and what we're doing right now, this broad, vague, just thing that we're fighting, and we can label something like the war on terror, we can label that anything we want, or we can put that.
How many countries are we engaged in armed conflict now?
How many are we engaged in? Or how many countries?
How many territories did you say before the podcast we're engaged in armed conflict in right now?
Well, we said, I think it was territories. I mean, it's, we're
seven.
Yeah, seven. I was
seven
thinking
states, of, independent yeah, countries.
Independent countries. And whatever, you can take this label and put it anywhere you want. Now, I mean, I can agree that most of what we are fighting for and the people I supported were fighting for, they are fighting evil people. And I think the rest of the world can more or less concur with that.
And that's what Eisenhower was alluding to, though, that Reagan expanded upon. But there is a difference between fighting for our individual freedoms and fighting for our sovereign interests.
Yes, very different. And that's where we're at right now. It isn't, this isn't, you know, I mean, you could probably make that argument for like Vietnam or something like that. Was it?
Well, every war is in our interest to win. It was in our national interest to win World War II.
Yes, very much so. However, was it in
it's
our...
It's more morally neutral than we want to accept.
Yes. So, yeah, I guess...
War is peace.
War is Peace. It's a good book. I mean, War and Peace. That's a good book.
Oh, no, but that's one of the three party slogans in 1984. Freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, and war is peace.
I can't say I agree with all of that, but...
I don't agree with any of it.
Yeah.
But that was the totalitarian state's mantras, and they maintained that by perpetual warfare, when, you know, Winston Smith starts arguing with his once ally O'Brien at the end of the book, he says, no, no, you haven't been subject to foreign invaders because we've been too busy staying over there and killing them.
Yeah. Well,
so it's a desperately slippery slope.
Yes. I think, you know, it's at the end of the day, I think you can look at the Dark Knight and say, who's the joke really on, you know? And I don't know, it's, you have to be, I guess it allows, when I watch something like The Dark Knight, I immediately think about what I'm willing to give up and what I'm willing to, or even in a sense, it's perspective shift of how I believe and how someone else might perceive that and the idea of what is good and evil. I mean, that's why you might, as much as you might think that your country's occupation of another country is in the best, you know, it's for the good. It's good. You know, obviously that's not,
it's a matter of perspective.
It's a matter of perspective, and it's not necessarily reciprocated. And, you know, it's like, for example, I mean, even just having, you know, air bases and stuff like that in different countries, not that it's good and evil.
Well, I know that the French resistance fighters, those were some bad mamma jammas, dude. Okay, they helped invent modern terrorism, all right, against the occupying Germans. They were very glad to see the Americans arrive with their English counterparts, and, you know, they died alongside their allies, okay? But I'm sure they wouldn't have appreciated our tanks remaining in Paris.
Exactly.
Matter of perspective.
Exactly. So I guess it's a just interesting good versus evil perspective and overall.
It's also interesting to think how beneficial would an ally, not saying someone that lied, but someone that covered honestly out of something other than fear in the media, how useful would he or she have been to the White Knight, Harvey Dent, you know, and yeah. Commissioner Gordon and the Batman? Could such an ally have prevented? Yeah, so it kind of makes me wonder, not that we're in anything like that, but it does make me look at Mod State's role in the Fourth Estate.
Yeah, Fourth Estate.
Because the media just completely abandoned all of them. The media just condemned the Batman for reasons we've discussed. Yes, he was a vigilante. But they also, all they did was play up the animosity between
the DA
the police and the DA.
Yeah, exactly. So
the media have really got a black eye.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other angle, is the role media plays in just, you know, civic, local, and just the role in general within the United States or the world. And that's, it's a bias. And when you interject that kind of bias, you have to be, it's almost like a long-term look at how that might affect the overall geopolitics in the end. So, I mean,
it was clearly God in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it definitely made me watching it again last night, definitely made, or 2 nights ago, whatever it was, really made me evaluate, you know, because I thought about that. I thought, where was the Fourth Estate? And then I realized they were too busy fomenting discontent, pitting people, you know, playing on their fears and turning rivals against each other. The antithesis of what we aspire to do here.
Yeah, indeed. Well, my friend, we're up to about 40 minutes. Pretty long weekend beat, but that was a good topic. I really like that movie. I think I'm going to start it tonight, actually. Watch it again.
I think it's time. I'll start. I've had the list going, but I want to compile a list. I want you and I to go ahead and settle on our top 13, you know, for the...
Perfect.
For this movie, so I'll start then. You know, but thanks. It's, as always, an honor to come on here with you. Thank you.
Indeed, my friend. And it is from me as well. So we'll be back next week. Well, Monday. and we'll get this ball rolling again. So with that, my friend, we'll see you.